Welcome, everyone, to episode 333 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today, since we now have the NBA returning, we need to talk about the big storylines to keep an eye on when it does come back in the end of July. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews, and we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is someone whose season is not over, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Now, that's a creative one right there.
Thank you.
It's going okay, all things considered. So full disclosure, we are recording this podcast, you know, back-to-back for the last podcast where we had Anthony Slane on, so it's still Friday, the 5th of June. Yep. And honestly, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, this episode is going to be released in a couple days from now, and I'm just sitting here thinking, what is going to be happening, like, in the U.S. over the next 3 or 4 days while this one is sitting on the shelf?
Right.
And that thought process is horrifying, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I almost am, like, hesitant to record episodes days in advance now, because who knows what the world is going to look like when this comes out in the middle of next week. But I'm moving in a couple weeks, so we need to squeeze as many of these things in as we can. Yep. Around my very annoyingly busy packing schedule.
Yep.
With that said, Mort, the Players Association is supposed to vote today on Friday to approve the 22 team plan that the Board of Governors approved on Thursday. From all reporting, Brian Windhorst especially said it's basically a formality at this point. So we're assuming that passes. We have not heard the public health details of the plan yet, which I know a couple people, Seth Partnow of The Athletic, James Herbert of CBS Sports, Sopan Deb of the New York Times, have really been honing in on in recent days. Howard Beck of Bleacher Report, friend of the podcast, did report on Thursday that the NBA does have a very extensive plan in place. They are just hammering out the final details with the Players Association, because both sides obviously need to agree to that. So it sounds like we should have those details at some point soon. I don't know if they'll be out by the time this episode comes out. If they are, obviously we don't know what they are, but we will discuss them when they do come out.
Right. Right.
With all of that said, Mort, there is a lot of basketball-related storylines that we need to discuss. First of which is, do we need to re-record by Felicia's for the 8 teams that are now not coming to Orlando?
Well, I mean, obviously we do. No, I am not going through that again. I don't even know if we're going to do five Felicia's after this second half of the season.
No,
I don't know. This is all crazy. By the way, is this episode 333? Are we really there?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. That's 1/3 away on to 1,000 almost.
Oh, God.
Wow, that's insane. Okay.
In 8 years, we'll be there.
Well, I mean, look, I have no plans on stopping this podcast, so why not?
That's true.
Yeah. This second half of the season that we're going to go into, and it's not really one half, but you know what I mean.
Right.
It's exciting. Like, I'm gonna do my best right now to push away what's happening in the world just for the next hour or so.
Yes.
Like, I'm actually very excited about certain aspects, and that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, I mean, I would encourage everyone, if you haven't listened to the previous episode with Anthony, go check it out, because we not only discussed the format itself and all of the implications there, especially for the Grizzlies, because Anthony is a Grizzlies writer for AllGrizzlies.com, which is an offshoot of Sports Illustrated. We also went deep into the ongoing protests over George Floyd's death and racial inequality, police brutality, all of the issues that are coming front and center in society recently. So, again, we know it's an uncomfortable conversation to have, but it's one we need to have. Everyone needs to have it right now. So
We don't care if it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, right. If you don't feel comfortable, tough luck. That's the point. We're going to focus on the basketball side of things today, but please do check that out if you haven't already. And we talked with Anthony about the structure of the, eight regular season games for each team, then the play-in tournament, then just normal playoffs. We're not doing a 1-16, no weird group stage, just normal, 1-8 on each side conference, after the play-in tournament. What are you excited to see in those regular season games before we even get into the possible play-in tournament and the playoffs?
All right, so the biggest thing, and I'm almost giddy about this, because here's the thing. When you have rookies ending up a season, right, when they go into an off season, they have a couple months off before they have to return to, training camp and practice and gearing up again. But I think it's so interesting to see this year's rookie class, what's going to happen, because now they're going to have to – they've had – what's this going to be, 4 months off? Something along those lines, three or four months. That's a summer right there. That's a full summer, and even more than that. So I wonder, when they return to the court, are they mentally in the mindset of, hey, I'm practically where I would be as a sophomore? Mm-hmm. Are they going to enter this second half of the season with this mindset of, oh, I've been there, I know the league now, I'm ready. I'm not going to hit any rookie wall because, theoretically, I'm a sophomore. I'm there. I think it's going to be so interesting to see how Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, those guys, how they're going to mentally approach the second half of the season.
Mm. Well, Zion didn't even have much of the first half of the season to go on. I believe he only played 19 games, but... yeah, I mean, especially given that both will be in a competitive playoff race in the West, it will be interesting to see if, Ja Morant was not short on confidence already. That was one of the things that made him so fun to watch this year, is he came in at, I think he was 19 when he came in, and just, had zero fear right away. Now, if he comes back even more emboldened by his rookie success and he's had time to build upon his game in his time away... that will be super fun to watch.
I mean, so obviously, and that's one of the biggest things, not every NBA player has had access to a hoop,
right?
They've been at home, but apparently NBA teams have really made sure that they still keep their bodies, active, lots of push-ups and core strength and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And for Ja, who's 175, what if this downtime has allowed him to add some strength, especially to his core? Maybe he comes back, 5 to 10 pounds of muscles heavier, and is ready to just absorb more contact.
You just made me realize we get mid-season muscle watch.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Because we're already hearing reports trickling. I mean, we mentioned James Harden last episode with Kelly Iko's report from The Athletic, where he's apparently lost a ton of weight. Now there was a report about Nikola Jokic, who's apparently shredded. And I think I saw a recent picture of him, and it did look like he lost a ton of weight.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, what if Nikola Jokic is not 400 pounds like I thought he would be?
If Jokic... I wonder what his best playing weight is. I don't think, it's... I think he has the Charles Barkley thing, right? Barkley was always... big for his size,
right?
But he actually, during his career, at some point slimmed down to about 240.
Mm.
And he felt that was a bit too light for him, because he was a bruiser, he was one who liked contact.
Sure.
And so he actually told this, I think that was when he was with the Sixers, I think he said to them, you know what, I actually need to bulk back up a little bit. I know it sounds wrong. I know I'm 6'6" or 6'4" or whatever the hell I am, but I need to bulk up a little bit. And I have a feeling that for Jokic specifically, some of that still appeals. If he goes down to 230, I don't know if he's going to be as influential offensively, because he does score a lot close to the basket, where you do need some brute force.
Yeah. Well, he was listed as 253 this year, which is at least 50 pounds undershooting what he was when he came into the season.
I mean, that is correct.
I know it was a running joke for most of that first month, and I mean, he looked lethargic in terms of, like, compared to where he has been in past years. And he just, the eye test did not lie. He was just bigger. He was definitely pushing 300 pounds. So that, I would agree, is not the ideal weight. But yeah, I don't think he needs to be like 210. I don't think you want him to start looking like Kristaps Porzingis.
Right. No, I think if anything, like 240, 250 sounds right about, you know, for him.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be, I mean, that is definitely one of the things I'm interested in, you know, from a Sixers perspective. Like, Joel Embiid's conditioning has been the story, one of the biggest storylines about him since he's come into the league. And, like, that's the thing every year is, what shape is he in coming into the playoffs? The last 2 years, he had the freak eye injury when he collided with Markelle Fultz's shoulder. And then last year, he had the knee tendonitis and the stomach illness, shall we say, during the Raptors series. So if he comes in and is in good shape, and, or, I mean, they'll have these 8 regular season games to get back into playing shape, because I think all of these guys are not going to be in game shape right away.
Right.
But it's going to be really interesting, because we've heard, you know, there have been not, I don't think any concrete reports, but there have been enough players alluding to it that, like, some players are definitely sneaking into their high school gyms or something, or, like, I would not be surprised if some players have been playing with teammates clandestinely. Like, you have the individual workouts at the team facility where it can only be one-on-one right now. But, like, if a couple guys are in the same city together, I would not be surprised if they've been working out together and just have not been publicizing it.
Yeah, I think that's very, very fair. By the way, I just looked up Embiid. He's listed at 250 pounds. Was that at birth?
Yeah, right. I know. Him and Jokic should have a competition each year. Like, how far off are you from your listed weight?
Yeah. Oh, man. Off-season muscle watch, but in-season. The Corona muscle watch.
we gotta have that as the hashtag.
Yeah, yep.
That is definitely one storyline to watch when play resumes. I will say this. I mean, the battle for seeding in general, I think, is going to be really interesting in both conferences.
Right.
I think it's fair to say the Bucks are up 6.5 on the Raptors. They are more or less locked into the number one seed in the East. The Lakers are up 5.5 on the Clippers. They're more or less locked into the one seed in the West. After that, I mean, the Raptors have a 3-game lead over the Celtics, so they're probably pretty locked into number two. But 3 through 6 in the East is wide open, and then 2 through at least 6, if not 7, there can be a lot of changing. Like, the Clippers are probably not going to fall below 4, but, I mean, 4 through 7, there's only a 2.5-game gap. And then, you know, the Pacers and Sixers are tied. They're only 2 games behind the Heat, 5.5 behind the Celtics for number 3. So there's a lot of stuff in terms of seeding that is yet to be determined.
No, I mean, this is going to be interesting. It absolutely is. Just having the league back and playing 8 regular season games. That eight games is actually a significant number. That's almost 10% of the normal regular season total. So you absolutely have, you know, some say in moving up or moving down, moving out even of the playoff picture. There could be a lot of change from what we have basically seen as being frozen standings over the past 3 months.
Yeah. And we haven't seen each team's finalized regular season schedule yet. Vince Goodwill of Yahoo Sports reported that the plan is basically to continue playing your previous regular season schedule, but, like, if you play a team that's not there, so if you play the Warriors, the Clippers, the Knicks, whatever, just skip them and move on to the next game.
Right.
Some people have, like, sketched out the rough how this might work. I know Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press is one of them. And there, you can more or less do it. There are a couple games that you need to add, but, like, you know, it's pretty doable as is. But, I mean, the strength of schedule thing could play in here as well. Like, I'm intrigued to see how each team's regular season schedule plays out just from, like, who's on each team's list, because, I mean, you're getting rid of all of the bottom feeders here. So, in theory, I mean, like, yeah, you'll get a couple of games maybe against the Wizards or the Suns or the Kings or whatever. But, like, more often than not, you're going to be playing really good teams every game, which makes, I mean, there aren't going to be many, if any, gimmies when you get down to Orlando.
Right. This is Charles Barkley's wet dream. No bad teams whatsoever to cover.
Except for the Wizards.
Well, I mean, yeah, okay. So record-wise, they're bad, but at least they're fun as hell.
Yeah, but I mean, they have the second worst defense in NBA history. They are a bad team.
Shh, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about how they can put up 140 points right. If they need to.
Right, no, they will be fine. I mean, that was the one game that I got to attend this season was Wizards Heat in D.C. And, like, none of the Wizards, that was when Rui was out, like, all of their good players were out, but they still won just because I think it was, like, that was the Garrison Matthews game, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. I remember watching that box score and going, oh, good for Garrison.
It was like, I was sitting there and I'm like, I cover this league. It like I work full time in sports and then I spend most of my free time writing about the basketball and I still have no idea who this guy is. And then he hit like 6 or 7 threes. It was great.
But, oh, that was when they won. They had still put up like 120 or something.
Yeah. Yeah, they just hit every shot they threw up. It was hilarious. Except for Isaiah Thomas, who I thought was they put on the court specifically to lose.
Oh, I have it right here. This was the game when Jan Mahinmi hit 2 threes.
Yeah, yeah. And wow. Pozechnik had a good game, too. He must have known I was there. I had to see the Sixers having
and Jordan McRae. Jordan McRae, he was the one who hit 6 threes. 29 points. My goodness.
Yeah.
So, that is such weird game.
The Wizards are just absolute train wreck on defense, but they can put up points. They will be fun to watch at least. So I will give you that. There shouldn't be too many. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to be super excited to see like Orlando Magic Brooklyn Nets game if KD and Kyrie are not playing. But then again, you're probably going to have them. Bunch of different games to choose from because it sounds like we're going to have a jam-packed schedule every night.
So this is what I'm most excited about because apparently you know, it's going to be like summer league setup.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to have games at a decent hour.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I saw Woj's phrasing about that where I think he said there are going to be like 5 to 6 games every day, and that's how I interpreted it too at first. I was like, oh my god, we're gonna have 16 straight days of like all day basketball. This is great. But now I think that they, from what I remember, we were talking with Keith a couple episodes ago, they have multiple courts they can use, so there could be games running concurrently. Right. And I do wonder, ratings wise and like with their agreement with their RSNs, if they are gonna stage games during the day.
Don't take this
or
away
if it's
from
just gonna be like there's gonna be, you know, if you have 6 games at night, you'll have early games on each court and then late games on each court.
Don't know the answer to that. Don't you take it away from me.
I don't know. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. I hope, because I would love, oh my god, after 4 months of no NBA, I would love for there to just be like 10 straight hours every day. Like that first weekend of the playoffs is one of the best because it's just like 4 games Saturday, 4 games Sunday. If we had that for 16 straight days... Yeah. I wouldn't leave my house. My dog would probably wither and die because he wouldn't go outside.
I mean, that's a fair trade-off.
Yeah, he's almost 10. He's had a good life.
Oh, man. Now, I'm just looking forward to seeing and hearing a ball bounce again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been dry, to be honest with you. And like, what I saw something like Trae Young was out hooping somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Or people are just like, does coronavirus still exist?
Right, did that go away? Yeah, that wasn't great. I will say this about the East, because I wrote a thing for Forbes yesterday being Thursday, but this is coming out a couple days later. So I wrote a thing for Forbes after the Board of Governors approved the plan, where, you know, I was talking about for the Sixers specifically how this plan could hurt them. Because, like, if we do stick with, you know, play your normal opponents, they should have a relatively easy schedule, you know, based on the one that Tim Reynolds mapped out. I believe the Raptors were the only team in the top four of either conference that they would play over those eight games. And they get, like, the Wizards. Mm. I think they got the Suns, the Spurs. I think they have the Magic, too. So it should be a pretty easy path. They would have a chance to get out of that number six seed, avoid potentially Boston in the first round. But then I'm looking ahead, and it's, okay, if the Sixers and Pacers just flipped, and Sixers are five, Pacers are six, then you get Miami in the first round and Jimmy Butler, and then you have the Bucks in the second round instead of the Raptors. And I'm almost wondering if we, in the East, if we get to a point toward the end of this regular season where if it's close, teams are incentivized to tank a little bit and avoid the Bucks until the conference finals to get that sixth seed.
I mean, that could be interesting. That could be interesting. I personally don't have any aspirations. I don't have any hope for the Sixers making a deep playoff run because this year has just been off for them. And I don't imagine having 4 months off doing them any favors outside of getting Ben Simmons back. Mm-hmm. But even so, you know, look at the guys that they are going to be faced up with. I mean, you have Jimmy Butler, who's a ball handling shot creator. One of the things that Philly just has a problem guarding. You have Malcolm Brogdon and a well rested Victor Oladipo at this point, both who can create something off the dribble. You have multiple shot creators on Boston. You still have Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet in Toronto, and then you just have, you know, Giannis in Milwaukee. But how are the Philadelphia 76ers going to go through all of that when they have such a hard time stopping creative ball handlers? My goodness.
Yeah, I mean, it would fall on Simmons and Josh Richardson, of course, and then Matisse Thybulle coming off the bench. He's another guy. You were talking about Ja Morant, Zion earlier with the like rookie sophomore bump. I wonder if, you know, Thybulle's had a couple months now to really just like internalize, okay, you know, he was a little foul prone, would just make some stupid mistakes at times and got into Brett Brown's doghouse in and out throughout the season. So I wonder if he's, you know, had some time to slow down and have the game come to him more. The Sixers are going to be really interesting to watch just because I don't know what their starting lineup is going to be. I mean, if you remember right before the season let out, or right before the All-Star break, that was when they moved Al Horford to the bench. Then Simmons came back after the All-Star break, had the back injury, so he was out for most of it. Horford moves back into the starting lineup. Then Shake Milton comes into the starting lineup. I mentioned this on the last episode too. Like, a Milton, Simmons, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid have not played a single minute together this season. That five-man group has not played at all. Milton, Embiid, and Simmons, just the three of them together, have only played a little more than 100 minutes together. So the Sixers might be breaking in a new starting lineup and only have eight games to go until the playoffs start, which is obviously not ideal when you're going up against potentially teams that have been together for a couple of years now, especially in Boston.
Man, I look at this as just fun. We're going to see brand new things all around, including a brand new starting lineup for the Sixers. I'm all in. I love it. I mean, you know, you haven't had any particular hope for the Sixers this year either way.
Right.
So, like, if you have to, you know, cool your jets a little bit and not be homerish, which you always been good at not being, you know, what is the best case scenario for the Sixers here?
Probably the second round. I mean, like, if everything broke absolutely right for them, the conference finals.
Right.
You know, if they, because they have matched up well against Boston this year, which is a rarity for them in recent years. And then, you know, a Toronto, like, I don't think they beat the Bucks either way. So if they get the four or the five, I think the best case scenario, they're out in the conference semis. If they stay in the six and it's Boston and then Toronto, is there a world wherein they could beat both of those teams? Yes. Would I say it's more than 50-50 that they're going to? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
A first round exit wouldn't surprise me at this point. Just because there's so much uncertainty there. We don't know. I mean, Ben Simmons will be healthy, but we don't know what condition he's going to be in. And again, it's just, you only have eight games to develop chemistry with a whole new starting five. That is obviously not ideal. I mean, hell, we don't even know, like, Al Horford's getting up there. He might, like, this amount of time off might be both good and bad for him in the sense that maybe this gets his knee to rest a little bit, but then maybe when he fires it back up again in training camp, he's quickly realized that, like, oh, crap, I'm older than I used to be, and this thing isn't, like, I can't play 30 minutes a game.
Oh, and I have 3 more years on my contract to go.
Right. Right, yeah. It just becomes more of an albatross with each game down in Orlando. Yeah. It's going to be great.
So you brought a Boston. Let's just talk about Boston real quick.
Yeah.
Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
And Jaylen Brown. Those two guys had great seasons.
Yeah.
Like, great seasons. For them to have this break, and I call it break in the most kindest of ways, I mean, they were carrying such a big load, both defensively and offensively, I feel like, because when you play those positions, like the swingman spots, you are just guarding a lot of very, very talented wings throughout the course of the league, while also having to shoulder significant offensive responsibilities. Like, both of them were averaging well over 20 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
For them to come back now, having all that time off and being rested while still being young, I wouldn't be shocked whatsoever if they just came back and hit the ground running.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we saw, especially that last month or so, like, Tatum was, it seemed like he was in the midst of taking the leap from all-star to superstar.
Oh, I think he was. Like, yeah. He was getting ready to make an all-NBA push, I feel.
Yeah, because it was, I mean, he had the one game against the Lakers where he was the best player on the court. And
yeah.
LeBron James and Anthony Davis were on the court with him.
I mean, yeah, look, let's just get the numbers out of the way. So in February, right, where he played 12 games,
mm-hmm.
he averaged almost 31 points a game.
Yeah.
And 8 rebounds. And yeah. he was just outstanding. He had a true shooting percentage of almost 64. Like 48 from three. Obviously, those numbers are, you know, not the norm, but it shows what he can do. And then in the very few March games, he was at 25-7. Like, this dude is just becoming one of those truly elite offensive players. Mm-hmm. But the great thing about it is he's not one of those guys who'll give you 30 and then give up 35. No, he's got so much energy to assert himself defensively as well. Now, I wonder how much of this is just being able to play with Jaylen and Kemba, who also both are averaging over 20 points a game. So, you know, he can pick and choose his spots offensively a little bit better, maybe.
Yeah.
But having that recognition and saying, oh, okay, I need to play off of those guys at the age of what, 20, 21, 22? Let me just look it up.
He's just 22. Turned 22 in March.
Right. That is outstanding. Like, we talk about basketball IQ, and then we mention Luka, and we mention LeBron. Like, I think Jason Tatum needs to be in that conversation.
Remember when people thought he had hit his ceiling at the age of 20?
Yeah, that was not great. That was not a good look. I think the thing with him was the Duke experience.
Yeah.
Because at Duke, he was just not given the type of shots that you probably wanted him to do. He looked very Carmelo-ish during his one, you know, college year. It was a lot of, like, pull-up twos.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't really look like he was going to be this multifaceted player. And lo and behold, here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's been phenomenal the entire year. And even Gordon Hayward rounded back into form relative to, I mean, last year he was like a shell of himself. This year he's definitely been better.
17?
He's not
17 a game?
Yeah, he's not like fully back, but, you know, it's probably the best you can hope for given the injuries and given the production you're also getting from guys like Tatum, Jaylen, Kemba. Like, Hayward's the clear number 3 option at best, maybe even the number 4. Those are great numbers either way.
Yeah. And then you allow Marcus Smart to just basically be a 3-point shooter who guards his ass off every night. I'm telling you, I still have Milwaukee as my number 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the Clippers as my number 2. But it wouldn't shock me whatsoever if Boston just kind of climbed their way into that conversation.
Yeah, they're a legit dark horse for sure.
Yeah.
Before we go to the West, I want to ask one question because this came up on Inside the NBA last night. I think Charles Barkley was the one who brought it up. You know, obviously, there are going to be a lot of guys who were injured at the time the season shut down and are going to come back. We talked about Ben Simmons as one. Anthony brought up Justice Winslow with the Grizzlies for another. Right. But the two biggest names, arguably, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving with the Brooklyn Nets. It does not sound like either of them will come back. And hell, no. Even John Wall, the Washington Wizards. Based on all reports, none of those guys are actually coming back, but the possibility exists at least until it doesn't. And more Barkley, I think he asked Adam Silver, like, how is this fair? Like, if the Brooklyn Nets are the 7th seed and they get the Toronto Raptors as the 2 seed, but the Toronto Raptors walk onto the court in Game 1 and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are there, is that fair? Should those guys be allowed to play? What do you think?
Of course they should. What's the logic that says that they shouldn't? Fair?
His logic was fair? That, like, had the season gone on as usual,
right,
in mid-April, playoffs begin, those guys would not have been available. Therefore, is it fair, you know, when it resumes in July and we get to the playoffs in mid-August, if they're healthy then,
yeah,
is it fair to have guys that they wouldn't have otherwise had?
Yes. Yes, because, look, they're not the only team benefiting from that.
Yeah.
Of course it's fair. That's a ridiculous... Oh, God, Chuck. Sometimes, man. No, I don't see that as a problem whatsoever. Besides, and I'm pretty sure that Chuck also forgot to mention this. I didn't watch, but this wouldn't shock me. Kevin Durant tore his Achilles.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be 32 this year. Like, yep. We are sitting here and we're pretending like it's a surefire thing that Kevin Durant comes back as the Kevin Durant that we know and love. I hope so. God almighty, I hope so. But we don't know. We have no idea. He could come back and he could be a shell of himself.
Yeah. I see Chuck's point just in terms of, like, how the schedule was versus how it is. But Adam Silver had the rebuttal of, like, well, none of this is fair. And I think That is the best answer to any of these questions. Like, is it fair? We don't know if teams are going to have some sort of home court advantage. Is it fair to the Milwaukee Bucks, who are 53-12, who are leagues ahead of the rest of the Eastern Conference, if they don't have any semblance of a home court advantage, whether it's, like, you know, there was talk of, like, flying in their home court, like the actual court, and so they can play on that. Is it fair that they might not have that? No, but it's also not fair that there's a pandemic that's killed 100,000 plus Americans. So no one's going
to
really...
There you go, going straight to the Americans.
Well, I mean, you know, the NBA is being played in America. I'm focusing on where the league actually is. But, I mean, regardless, like, people will play the tiniest violin the tiniest violin for the Bucks if they complain about that, or if, you know, the Raptors do end up facing KD and Kyrie in round 1. Oh, well. Yeah. Tough crap. Beat them.
Let me put it this way. The only thing that would be unfair is during a game if someone gets screwed out of an important win because of a ref call. That's unfair. That's it. Outside of that, we just cannot look at this season and go, oh, this is unfair. Because, yeah, like you said, it's unfair for everybody. I raised this issue really quickly and really briefly in the last episode. This whole situation is also unfair to the Chicago Bulls, if we want to go with that route.
Mm-hmm.
Because look at the schedule that they had in front of them. They were definitely going to get a lot worse. They were going to lose way more games. They were going to drop, and they were going to get a significantly higher draft pick. Presumably, obviously, the draft lottery hasn't occurred yet, but they would have had much better odds at landing the number 1 pick. But right now, because the season is on hold, or for them, it's ended, rather.
Yeah, yeah.
They're slotted in to picking 7th for the 4th straight time, which is amazing. But that's
besides
the point.
They might as well just rename the number 7 spot the Chicago Bulls. Just keep them there forever.
I think that would be hilarious and perfectly suitable. But, I mean, so everyone's getting screwed, if you catch my drift here.
Right, right.
It's, I mean, even teams who aren't playing. And they wanted to play. The Hawks wanted to play. Like, the Hawks wanted their guys to get reps. like the you know, how much time is going to pass for the Hawks to play another season game compared to when they last played? 10 months or so, right? 9 to 10 months.
Nine. Well, now they're talking about having some sort of like mandatory camp just to avoid that particular problem, because it's right. Fair. I mean, that's the longest off season you'll ever have.
Exactly. So everything is unfair. So now, yeah. I don't care about fairness this time around. This is about wrapping up a season. This is solely about not having to cancel a season.
Right. And, I mean, the other possibility lingering over all of this, and it will be until we get through this season, is what happens. You know, we don't know the health medical details of how they're going to be confined in this bubble or campus or whatever you want to call it. Can they go outside of the right. wide world of sports complex at any point? Can they go to restaurants? Can they do this and that, whatever? How do the families come in? The possibility of a player testing positive for COVID. What happens then? Because in theory, that player is probably, I would assume, without seeing the final details, they're out until they test negative twice.
Yeah.
And that's going to take, I mean, if we're talking about a playoff series, if a player tests positive, he's probably out for the entire, that series, if not longer.
Yeah.
Is that going to be fair?
Again, no. None of this is fair.
Yeah. But right. I mean, it's it's the same idea of like, was it fair that Kevin Durant tore his Achilles in the finals last year? Was it fair that Klay Thompson tore his ACL? No. I mean,
no.
Injuries happen every year. This time we're just going to have injuries plus pandemic.
Yeah. And besides, I want to argue one thing.
Yeah.
You know, if the Toronto Raptors step on the court and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant is there, you know, the mere fact that Kyrie Irving is there, I mean, doesn't that play into Toronto's advantage?
I knew you were going to go there. God damn it.
Hey.
I was hoping you were going to say, just beat them anyway. Just prove you're the better team. But of course. Poor Kyrie.
Well, he played 20 games this year. He was 8-12.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
He's turned into your new Wiggins, I feel like.
He's turned into everyone's new Wiggins. Come on.
Yeah, except he has such a, I mean, much more of a proven track record and a higher ceiling than Andrew Wiggins. But yes, the downside is clearly there as well. Maybe. Do you think he watched the SpaceX launch the other day?
No. I think he just called it fake news. Does he call it a global pandemic, you think?
Oh, good. Well, I mean, just cause. Oh, yeah. Good point. Earthful pandemic?
Yeah. Something along those lines.
Oh, man. Let's go into the West briefly, because, you know, I don't think there's going to be tanking like there would be. I mean, there can't be for the 8 seed, just because there's most likely going to be a play-in tournament. But 2 through 7, the Clippers are a game and a half up on the Nuggets for the 2 seed. They are 3 games up on the Jazz, who are the 4 seed. So I'm going to guess the Clippers are locked in at either 2 or 3, which means we should avoid a potential Clippers-Lakers series until the conference finals, which I think is the NBA's dream at this scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Aside from that, though, I mean, we've got 4 games separating the Nuggets at 3 and the Dallas Mavericks at 7. Do you think there should be some sort of chicanery going around with these teams to try to work their way into a particular matchup? Clearly they want to avoid 7 to not get the Clippers in the first round, but is there a team in there that you would be actively trying to face?
That's a good one. It depends on who you are as a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, if I'm Houston, right, I wouldn't. I don't even think that's possible to dropping down to 8. It's just not. But let's assume for a second it just goes wrong for the Lakers and the Clippers somehow overtake number 1, and the Lakers are at 2 and Houston goes to 7. That's the one matchup. If I'm Houston, I do not want to face the Lakers. I just don't. I understand focusing on pace and space and small ball and all that. But look, if this is against LeBron James and Anthony Davis, they are going to basically dunk and lay up their way to a win. throughout most games of that series. That's unreal. Like, who do they have to guard Anthony Davis?
PJ Tucker.
That's not an answer.
No, I know. Well, I mean, the counterpoint would be, like, I think the first game of the small ball experiment, I want to say it was their first game that they actually beat the Lakers.
Yeah, but it's one game in the regular season. I'm just not going to put as much stock into that. I think when you have a chance to go into a playoff series, you know, the team is going to do additional pro scouting. The team is going to, like, have additional notes. It's going to be an adjustment upon adjustment kind of thing from game to game. And ultimately, if I'm Houston, I'm really scared of the possibility of going up against someone with a dominating, not post presence, but big presence, while also having a guy like LeBron, who is, what, 6'8", 260, and can play inside bully ball if he has to. That is my nightmare if I'm Houston. I don't have a shot blocker right now. I don't have great defenders near the rim. I look, again, I love PJ Tucker of what he does. I love Robert Covington for what he does. Neither are rim protectors. That's just not their game.
Right. Right.
So that's one matchup I would hate.
Even if, you know, let's say the Lakers stay at one.
Right.
Do you think that the Rockets should really try to avoid either the four or the five so they wouldn't have the Lakers in the second round if they did advance past the first round, much like the Sixers at six to avoid the Bucks?
That could be interesting. Yeah, I mean, look, whatever it takes to basically prolong a series against the Lakers for Houston's perspective, that's what I would do, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I meet up with them at some point, I just got to have to deal with it and see what I can do. But I would definitely want to avoid that. And on some level, I would probably also want to avoid Denver.
Mm. Yeah.
There's a lot of size there as well. And not just off of Jokic, but, you know, you have Michael Porter Jr., who I have to assume is going to play a little bit more. Coming back here, you know, that's a 6'10 guy who can put the ball on the floor and get into the paint.
You have Millsap, Plumlee, Jeremy Grant as well.
Right. As those guys as well. Even Will Barton, who's 6'5, can get into the paint. So they have so many penetrators. Jamal Murray will cut you off, will cut to the basket. It's so much focus on getting to the rim. And I just wonder if defensively Houston's up for that. Offensively, I think they'll be fine, though. That needs to be said. Houston's offense, I have a lot of faith in. It's their defense I'm slightly concerned about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wonder if teams try to intentionally target the Utah Jazz. That was the one team that I was really thinking of because Bojan Bogdanovic is now out for the season. He had wrist surgery recently. We don't know. We haven't heard either way whether Joe Ingles is serious about not coming back. I mean, he made comments earlier during this hiatus where he inferred that he might not. I don't want to say for sure that he's not going to or that he is, but that's at least lingering out there for now. But even if he does come back, Bogdanovic was such a big part of that team.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the Jazz were... they had an identity crisis for most of this season anyway. They just really struggled to get Mike Conley incorporated into what they were doing. They couldn't, you know, they were dancing around with Ingles coming off the bench or starting for a lot of the year. Should Royce O'Neal start to at least give you some defensive presence on the wing beyond, you know, of course, Rudy Gobert is in there in the middle. So with Bogdanovic out, I mean, he started... I want to say every single game for them, or it looks like all but one game for them this year.
Yeah, all but one, right.
That's a big thing for them to figure out in eight games.
Well, it goes beyond that even. I mean, so when you look at Utah's three-point shooting, they led the league in three-point field goal percentage, and they were eighth overall in volume in terms of made shots. So when you combine volume and efficiency, they were a top five three-point shooting team in the league. And a lot of that was Bojan Bogdanovic. He shot 41% from three on seven attempts per game. When you take him out of the equation, you know, they're still good, but they're not at that level. Yeah. So if you are a top five three-point shooting team and you can no longer rely on being that, and you have to pivot into being maybe more of a mid-post or low-post kind of team, that's a major, major adjustment that you have to take account for. So what I imagine is going to happen is that they're going to revert back to giving the ball to Donovan Mitchell and basically telling everyone to get the hell out of his way. But I don't think that's winning basketball.
Right.
Now, Jordan Clarkson, I'll give him this, he was so good after the trade. Like, he came over, you know, 15 and a half points a game. So there's another outlet there for scoring. And hopefully Mike Conley steps up a little bit more. But it's still, it's three triples a game and 20 total points that is off the table with Bogdanović that they somehow need to replace. And I just don't know how they do it, at least from a perspective of efficiency. Like, do you expect Donovan Mitchell to go out there and suddenly become like a 60 true shooting percent type of guy on high volume? Because I don't.
No. I mean, that's the big concern for them, is we've seen the give the ball to Donnie and get out of the way strategy, and it hasn't necessarily worked once we get to the playoffs in previous years. I mean, they lost 4-1 against the Houston Rockets last year in the first round, and it wasn't really that competitive. And the same deal the year before, they beat the OKC 4-2, but then they lost 4-1 to the Rockets again. So, like, if I'm the Rockets, I am eagerly trying to somehow land in whether it's a 3-6 or a 4-5 with the Jazz. That would be the team I would be targeting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Because they're, I mean, even without Bogdanović too, they lose a good bit of size. I mean, he was 6'8", 216. Like, I would assume their starting lineup would then be Mitchell and Conley, both of whom are 6'1". Ingles, O'Neal, Gobert, probably.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, your tallest guy outside of Gobert is Ingles.
That's not great. And then, plus, like, Royce O'Neal, while, you know, a good defender, he's really not much of a scorer. Like, 6 points a game in 29 minutes, you're going to need that. I don't think you can have two guys in the starting unit, Ingles and O'Neal, who are somewhat low-volume scorers. Like, Ingles this year, 9.8 points per game in 30 minutes of play. Granted, that was in large part because of Bogdanović, and you can make the argument that, okay, without Bogdanović, Joe Ingles' shot amount is going to increase. Fair. But he's not going to give you 20 points a game.
Right.
Royce O'Neal is not going to turn into like a 15-point, you know, play 15-point a game player.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Ingles had a career high last year at 12.1.
Right. So you're going to need offense, and I wonder who that's going to be. I mean, I mentioned Jordan Clarkson. Maybe they swing for the fences and start him.
Hmm.
But man, that would be a small team because he would have to start at the three.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it has to be Mike Conley, right?
Who leaves the starting lineup?
No. Who, like, that's where that additional scoring it has to come from.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No. Oh, for sure. I think that was the hope. I don't think the Jazz expected Bogdanović to crack 20 points a game. I think they looked at him as being some type of, you know, a very great complimentary player because obviously they paid him a lot of money. But I think that what they saw in him was a result of Mike Conley not being the Mike Conley of last season.
Yeah. Conley was 21.1 points per game last year. He's at 13.8 this year.
Exactly. Major drop off. So this is a chance for him to have a redemption story. I wonder how, like, I just brought up Ja Morant at the top of the show, you know, having that mental break from his rookie season. Maybe this does the same for Mike Conley. Just, okay, I have the first season, quote unquote, under my belt with the Jazz. I now know the system. I've had a break. I can return with a clean slate. Now let's get back to it. Maybe this could be the best thing that happened for Mike Conley's Utah tenure.
Yeah, that's very true. I wonder, will the same apply for Al Horford, hopefully?
I don't want to hurt your feelings there, Bri, but
what about OKC? Do you think teams might try to target them just because, I mean, you got Chris Paul, Gallo, of course, but, like, SGA is still pretty young. Maybe you just think, like, they're still kind of this team in transition.
A little bit. Like, OKC's been good. They've been really good. and I don't think you should sleep on them, but the fact of the whole thing remains here. They're one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in the league. What they get you a, you know, they get to the line a ton, and they defend very, very well, but they have a tough time getting into the offense. I know that they have Chris Paul and SGA, but they were 28th in the league in assists. And again, not being a great 3-point shooting team. In the playoffs, when defensive intensity increases, those are two key elements that you can sort of say, okay, if we can not get them into their passing games and we can take the long shot away, that is going to help us survive a 7-game series.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I would absolutely target them. I would. Of course I would. Especially if I have size.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, I think if there's going to be some, like, tanking for seeding or, like, you know, trying to manipulate your seeding, the Jazz will be number one on that list. But I don't think anyone's going to be trying to match up against the Denver Nuggets. Like, I think Jazz are one, Thunder are two.
Yeah.
Maybe the other teams would try to target the Rockets if they had the size to just overwhelm them. Like, maybe the Denver Nuggets would be, like, most excited about facing the Rockets versus the Jazz or the Thunder, but probably not. I think every team's going to want the Jazz.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, where the final piece of the puzzle is going to come in if you're the Thunder, though. Like, if you look at it from their point of view, you know, what can they do to step their game up in the postseason? I feel their bench is really a problem if you ignore Schroeder, obviously, who's a sixth man. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, they have Terrence Ferguson, Hamidou Diallo, you know, Lucas Dort. Those three guys, you know, wing players, all of them, are not really producing a whole lot. Like, right. If you look at their production in somewhat significant minutes, like, they need something else. They need a spark. They need someone else to just kind of be a part of that team, someone who can hit long shots, someone who can get the offense going just a little bit more. I wonder who the hell that player could be. Or maybe the solution is SGA. Maybe this is him basically saying, okay, I've also had that break that Mark right. mentioned previously. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm just looking at a team. I think they played really well this year, but I'm not scared of them.
No. Yeah. I mean, SGA's already playing 35 minutes a game, so it's not like his shot volume could go up, but he's not. Yeah. It's not like he's playing 28 and he's going to play 38, and that's going to make the difference. You know, it's not like
right.
that's what's going to happen with Giannis and Chris Middleton. That you have to rule that out for him. And we don't even know at this point. I mean, as of today, Friday, June 5th, it is unclear whether two-way players will even be allowed to play in the postseason. It seems like right. that has been discussed, and it sounds more likely than not just to give teams more players in case of a coronavirus outbreak. So I would assume he'll be available, but we don't know for sure. And if he's not, that is an important piece to OKC that won't even be there. So, yeah, I mean, again, I don't think teams are going to, like, actively tank or whatever, like, manipulate their seeding just to draw OKC. But I think whichever team gets them in the first round is like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think about the Mavericks, Mort? We'll see Luka's first postseason run. I think we're all but guaranteed they have a 7-game lead over the Grizzlies. So I don't know if they have mathematically clinched a playoff spot, but more or less they have. We'll see Luka's first playoff run, but do you think this time off could help you know, him and Porzingis get more aligned?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they were plenty aligned, honestly. And I think this time off is going to allow them to watch film, look at maybe where they can improve even more. But they just have such an interesting team. They had a great, great offense, one of the best offenses in NBA history, actually, mm-hmm. because they were just launching. They were playing freely. You know, Rick Carlisle has done a tremendous job with this group this year. Like, he it's been this next man up mentality. Like, he's giving guys a shot. The minutes are spread out. Everyone is performing. Everyone is contributing. You know, they, unlike the Thunder, who we just talked about, they don't have a lot of rotation guys who aren't putting up points. You know, everyone, right. It seems to be this mantra within the Dallas Mavericks organization that if you are going to play, you know, we need you to produce on some level at both ends. You know, you cannot just be a defender. We need you to make shots and the vice versa. You know, Dorian Finney-Smith, 9 points a game, maybe not sound like much, but when you look at the grand scheme of things and when you look at how the games are played, you know, he's becoming a more threatening three-point shooter who's looking for the corners and running in transition. And there's a lot of versatility there. What I'm looking for them is basically just sharpening up that offense and basically relying on it to the point where they can go, okay, we know we have our offense set. We know that it functions because it's one of the best in league history. Mm-hmm. Now let's focus on defense. Let's make sure that we are making the right reads. Let's make sure our rotations are tight. You know, let's go. Right. And they have some of the guys there for it. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis obviously is not necessarily a great positional defender, but he is a shot blocker. And you and I have talked about this so many times. If you have a mobile and agile shot blocker, even though that guy may not be a great positional defender, he will scare teams off. He will make sure that certain players who enter the lane will change or throw the ball away. So that's an asset. Then you have Maxi Kleber, who is not a great shot blocker, but is better at being that positional defender. So I think if you pair Porzingis and Kleber more alongside each other, that's going to balance things out. And then, of course, you have Luka offensively, who can just do whatever the hell he wants. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do defensively as the playoffs near.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what. If it's Clippers-Mavericks round one, I don't think I would be picking the Mavericks, but I think that would be the most fun series that you could draw up.
That would be fantastic. I mean, that would be one of those Portland Denver series from a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that would just be like super fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I would love that. But I mean, look, I would take the Clippers in that series, but I'm not ruling anything out.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of the big question hanging over this resumed season is what does every team look like after this long, like this prolonged hiatus? Mm-hmm. And do we know enough from 8 games to say like, okay, the hierarchy is exactly as it was in mid-March, or like, do the standings maybe not matter as much, and or like the talent maybe not matter? Like, are the Lakers, Clippers, Bucks still the overwhelming front runners to win the title this year, or does this weird scenario create the possibility of, like, who knows, maybe the Houston Rockets title odds have gone up significantly? Or you mentioned the Boston Celtics earlier, like,
yeah,
maybe they'll have a surprise run to the finals that wouldn't have happened if we had just continued the season as normal.
Exactly. We can't rule it out. I understand that why some people would say, well, it's still Giannis, it's still LeBron, it's still Kawhi. Those guys are the main, guys on the main teams. So obviously it's going to be the same teams that are going to be in contention. But I don't think we can look at it as simplistic as that. Having 4 months off is in effect an off season, whether you like it or not. Then it depends. Okay. How much work can you put in over that off season? That matters greatly. But for some players, having time off and having this time to actually replay the last season in their heads and kind of go over multiple scenarios, watch video and kind of learn about themselves. Like, some of the game's truly great observers and, basketball lifers, they will have spent 4 months just watching tape on a loop while doing a lot of core work. Are you going to tell me that watching tape for 4 months is not going to make you better, or at least make you more observant on the court? You can't convince me of that. That is going mm-hmm. to help your game. So this is about homework. When this season comes back, who has done their homework? That's the biggest question. And if the Dallas Mavericks have done that, they could be in that play. They could be in that conversation. The Boston Celtics as well. Like, that's a smart organization. They put an emphasis on smart players. That wouldn't shock me whatsoever. You brought up Houston. Maybe that's exactly what they needed, because Russ is going to be 32 this year, I want to say. And mm-hmm. and Harden is also, like, what 31 this year? So maybe this is exactly what they needed. There are so many layers to this that we haven't really considered.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, the playoffs, of course, like, star power rises to the top more often than not, but The Last Dance should have been a reminder to all of us that role players matter too. Role players hit big game deciding shots a lot of the time, and which, you know, like, of course, all right, Giannis, even if you could pencil him in for his usual 35-15-5, is George Hill still going to be shooting 50% from three after a 4-month layoff?
Yeah, those are the big questions. I agree.
Yeah. So I want to end on this note more for a team like the Bucks or for the team like the Lakers that have such a commanding lead in the standings or pretty much locked into the one seed. What do you expect to see out of them in this 8-game regular season? Do you think they're just going to use it as a tune-up and like guys like Giannis are only going to play 20 minutes a night since you're just trying to keep these guys in bubble wrap until the playoffs? Or do you need to play LeBron, Anthony Davis, Giannis, Chris Middleton? Do you need to play them more than you usually would in a late regular season game just to get them back into game shape?
No, I don't think so. I think, well, it depends. So LeBron, I don't think so. I think he's been in this for so long. I think he has that switch, right? I think, you know, what is this, year 17?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, bubble wrap his ass, for sure.
Yeah.
Play him 20 minutes a game until the playoffs, it's fine. Giannis, on the other hand, that's the interesting part. Because, you know, he's obviously one of the most dominating players we've seen since Shaquille O'Neal. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And he, while I understand that this is his, what, seventh year in the league, he's still just 25, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably give him just a little bit more run. Not that he needed much. Like, in the regular season, he was playing under 31 minutes a night. Like, that's right. Ridiculous, by the way. So it's not as if he needs, like, a major, minutes bump or anything. You can sort of say, okay, if we play him between 25, 28 minutes a game, he's close enough to his normal average, but we're still shaving some time off to make sure that we kind of, you know, bubble wrap him a little bit. I think that would be the approach for Milwaukee. And I think the same could kind of go for Davis, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, Kawhi is the big one for me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what do you do there with the load management thing? Do you go to load management immediately? Or do you say, okay, you've had 4 months off. You can manage having 8 regular season games and a playoff. Or do you keep the status quo and say, okay, you play 2 games and then we're going to sit your ass for one. Like, just keep going what you're doing. And then when the playoffs come around, that's when you unleash him? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, because it sounds like, I mean, at best, it's going to be every other day. I think there was some, I want to say Woj reported at least one back-to-back for every team during the regular season. I don't remember exactly if he was the one who reported it or not, but you do remove travel from the equation, which is another variable that you have to consider, because maybe you're more willing to play these guys heavier minutes or in back-to-back games that they otherwise wouldn't have played, since you don't have the additional, okay, then we have to get on a plane and travel 5 hours and we're going 3 time zones away. It's like, all right, you're just walking back to your hotel room after this. We don't care. Go sit in the tub.
Yeah.
I mean, the LeBron point is fair. He also has, like, Lord knows he spends $1 million plus on his body every year. He's got, like, cryogenic chambers in his house. Like, he among anyone, probably has the most at his disposal. I think he will come in game ready right away.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I think Giannis was one of the guys who they're like, he doesn't even have a hoop at home.
Yeah, which really weirded me out when I learned that, because I was listening to a podcast years ago with Vogue, and apparently Giannis wanted to buy the Bucks' old training facility.
Right.
And
right.
Live in it.
Yeah.
So I was under the impression, and that was years ago, so I was under the impression that he would have, in the meantime, have made sure that he got himself a house with a huge-ass court, but I guess not.
Well, I would assume, and I think I saw some player saying this, they were like, well, we have 24/7 access to our team's facility. Why did we, like, we didn't need a hoop because we could just go to our facility all the time. Yeah, like, we've never had this situation before where everything shut down. You know, even during the NBA lockout, it's not like we couldn't play basketball. Like, you know, remember, like, KD was the street court legend that summer, and that's when we all still like KD.
Yeah, that's true. So, and another thing, if you build a court in your house, it's going to be more difficult to sell that house later on.
Right. Yes, as Shaq has learned multiple times at this point. Yeah, so I think that was probably the big motivation. It sounds like, I know Miami, Jimmy Butler, like, bought buckets for his entire team. So I'm assuming that most teams at this point have supplied their players with baskets. But yeah, I mean, like, I that is the fundamental question that we will not have an answer for until July 31st is, what do these teams even look like? Who is game ready? Who is not? Who is going to play a lot? Who's going to exert themselves during the regular season? We just don't know, but it's going to add such a fascinating wrinkle to, you know, the, these quote unquote seeding games in the regular season. And then also the first round of the playoffs. Like, I do wonder if we see more upsets than usual this year, just because of these weird circumstances.
And when that happens, all the unfair comments is going to, are going to rise again. But
the asterisk, yeah, if the Bucks lost before the conference finals.
Yeah, look, I don't care. We have to nip that in the bud. There's not going to be an asterisk for this year. There's just not. Stop it. I mean,
although, I do wonder, like, you know, God forbid the Bucks do lose early and Giannis has the Supermax decision to make this offseason. Like, how does that affect? Does he say, oh, you know, we're 53-12. Had the season gone on as usual, we probably would have made the finals. Or is he so pissed off if they lose in the conference semis that he's like, nope, not signing it. Pony up.
No,
I'm going to be a free agent.
He's going to be logical about it because he's European.
That's okay.
That too. No, but honestly, I was only half kidding there. I do think he's going to be logical about it because when you hear Giannis talk, and when you just basically hear him, you know, express thoughts about certain things, like, he seems like a very logical person. So It wouldn't shock me if he's fully aware that this thing is just this whole pandemic just took everything away from virtually everyone, and it just made, you know, this whole season a coin flip ultimately. And he knows, you know, how much the Bucks have done to shape this team around him. I think, I mean, it would surprise me a great deal if Giannis wanted to move away from this position. It really would. And I know that there have been reports that the Golden State Warriors have really done their homework on him and really, through back-channeling, made it clear to him that they want him. But here's something that we don't talk about enough. You know who's done that as well? The Bucks. The Bucks have made sure that he knows that he's their first priority. Make no mistake about it. So when people and fans and pundits are sitting there going, well, you know what? The Golden State Warriors have really made it him known that he's wanted. Yeah, what the hell do you think the Bucks have done over the last 7 years of his career?
Right. Also, why would the Bucks want Andrew Wiggins?
That is also like, very reasonable, yes.
The Bucks very well might say, we would rather lose Giannis for nothing in free agency than take Andrew Wiggins, and unless he came with an absolute bonanza of picks, which the Warriors, to their credit, they do have. But
yeah. But still,
yeah, we'll save our Giannis free agency speculation for another day. It is just another like complication to throw in there, though. It's like if a team loses, I mean, even from the Sixers' perspective too, like if they lost to the first round, do they say, oh, well, we've been inconsistent all year, this was probably going to happen anyway? Or is it like, oh, well, this was just a really weird year, we had to, you know, debut a new starting lineup in Orlando for the first time, we had 8 games to get ready, like, do we need to break this thing apart? And I don't have a good answer to that question.
Well, they're in a different situation, I feel like. They need to ask that question regardless.
Yeah, but I just wonder, in general, how the outcome of these playoffs will affect teams' decision-making about, do we need to make radical changes to our roster? Same goes for Houston.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. It's a great layered question that we'll figure out, I guess.
Yeah. Soon enough, within the next couple months.
Yeah.
Which is a great thing to be able to say. Well, that is a good place to wrap up, Mort. Thank you all for joining us. Hope you're all doing well and staying safe out there. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we are being hosted on Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian.